We're halfway through the final chapter in the shuttle story. Diamond Aircraft won't be at Oshkosh. And ACINA spots a political opportunity. This is Aero News. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for downloading this AeroCast. Here's what's up in aviation for Monday, July 11th, 2011. Defying a forecast which held a 70% chance the launch would be scrubbed for weather, the shuttle Atlantis was launched within 3 minutes of its scheduled mission start time Friday at Kennedy Space Center. It docked yesterday with the International Space Station, bringing the Raffaello multipurpose logistics module and important supplies to stock up for the start of the post-shuttle era at the station. On the way home, Atlantis will return a failed ammonia pump, a task which no other spacecraft can do. A crowd estimated at almost 1 million people came to watch the last shuttle launch, the 135th, and the 33rd for Atlantis. NASA, a number of individuals who've worked in the program over the decades, and space buffs in general have filled social media and YouTube with tributes to the program. Emotions ranging from outrage to quiet despair are being expressed over the end of the program. You know, I can't say I was ever really a space buff, but as an ordinary citizen, technology aficionado, and taxpayer, I'm way more excited than most of my colleagues to see what will come next. There's no doubt some portion of the current workforce at NASA and its contractors will be displaced, just as many of us have had to change careers a couple of times. But freed from the politics, bloated cost structures, and low risk tolerance of the government sector, I think America's space effort is now free to resume world leadership, not doomed to lose it. And I suspect we won't have to wait long to see if that's true. Diamond Aircraft has announced it can't make big expensive trade shows pencil out this year and will, quote, forgo the very significant expense of our traditional exhibits at Oshkosh, NBAA, and AOPA Summit in 2011. While this was a difficult decision, we feel it is the right business decision that allows us to focus our resources on the tasks at hand, the DJET program and support of the existing piston fleet, to directly pursue strategically targeted markets and to improve our communication with you, unquote. Diamond President Peter Maurer provided more detail to ANN, quote, to strengthen Diamond's overall position, we also continue our diversification into emerging markets, commercial flight training operations, and special mission aircraft applications. As such, we will continue to exhibit at smaller industry-specific events, including, for the first time, a presence at the Airborne Law Enforcement Association convention in New Orleans to introduce our special mission Austro-engine-powered DA-42 MPP multipurpose platform to the U.S. security market. The retail market is, of course, very important to us, and we intend to resume our full show presence when the economic climate improves. In the interim, we will be strengthening our worldwide distribution and service network, and our distributors will continue active participation in local and regional events, unquote. Stepped-up communication with owners will come through the relaunch of the DJET Flyer, dedicated to technical highlights, customer profiles, and more. Increased frequency for the Diamond e-newsletter, the introduction of monthly customer support specials, and Diamond Fest, a factory celebration with promised DJET flyby at Diamond's facility in London, Ontario. That event is scheduled for the weekend of September 17th. With the debate over raising the U.S. government's debt ceiling the focus on Capitol Hill lately, Airports Council International North America President Greg Principato has seized the moment to ask the administration and Congress to end federal restrictions on how local airports can raise revenue. In his letter to President Obama, Vice President Biden, and the bipartisan congressional leadership, Principato stresses that, quote, by removing the federal government from regulating how local communities and their airports generate resources for investment in aviation infrastructure, you can do the right thing for the economy and for our nation, while also pursuing a course that is good politics all the way around, unquote. Commercial airports are frustrated by federal limits on the so-called PFC, for passenger facility charge. That's a fee on every ticket, which backs airports needing to raise bond money to fund airport improvements. The fee was originally capped at $3 in 1992 and has been increased only once in 2001 to $4.50, trailing way behind inflation in construction costs. The FAA agrees it should be raised to $6. ACNA wants $7.50. The airlines have fought raising or removing the cap, claiming that any fee increase would hurt their business. But at the same time, the airlines themselves have introduced billions of dollars in new a la carte fees, which, if triggered in some combinations, can exceed the base prices of the tickets themselves. Last month, the American Association of Airport Executives pointed this out. Quote, "With ancillary fee collections growing rapidly and producing billions in airline revenue, it's difficult to understand why the industry opposes the collection of a mere fraction of that amount by local authorities to fund critical airport safety, security, and capacity improvements," unquote. Both groups are timing their lobbying campaigns to coincide with heated debates on how to reduce federal spending. It's possible that some portion of federal spending on airports could be replaced by revenues opened up through higher PFCs. The FAA has proposed civil penalties against FedEx and ERA helicopters. The FAA wants to fine FedEx about $690,000 for failing to provide pilots in command with complete, accurate info on the nature, quantity, and weight of hazardous materials loaded on their aircraft. Pilots in command must be given this information under hazardous materials regulations. ERA Helicopters of Lake Charles, Louisiana, faces a $194,000 fine for allegedly failing to conduct required pre-employment drug tests and receive verified negative test results in 2010 before hiring 8 employees to perform safety-sensitive duties. The FAA also cited ERA for allegedly failing to conduct required random testing of at least 25% of its safety-sensitive employees during 2009. Both companies have 30 days to respond. Up next on ANN, the Barefoot Bandit was caught a year ago today. Airbus looks at fuel cells for power to taxi. And a historic helicopter gets a restoration. You're listening to Aero News.
Diamond Aircraft's new DA-40 Diamond Star XL includes all popular Diamond options, combined with the sensational new Garmin GFC-700 Autopilot, a higher performance power plant, and increased gross weight. This makes the Diamond Star XL the perfect choice for affordable personal flying. The Diamond Star XL features equipment and enhancements that increase performance, capability, safety, convenience, and comfort. Visit Diamond on the web at www.diamondair.com or call 888-359-3020.
We're back to wrap up your Aero Briefing for Monday, July 11th. I'm Paul Platt. Today is the one-year anniversary of the arrest of Colton Harris Moore, who became known as the Barefoot Bandit for his alleged theft of planes, boats, and cars, and at least 100 suspected burglaries over 2 years. The troubled teen from Camano Island, Washington, reportedly endured an abusive father who deserted the family after attempting to choke the boy, the death of a stepfather, and repeated incarcerations for minor offenses. Moore was said to have developed the survival skills to live in the woods for days at a time to escape his difficult family life, breaking into cabins for blankets and other needs. Finally, in April of 2008, facing his first serious jail time for the theft of a neighbor's camcorder, he escaped from a group home in Renton, Washington, and the string of crime reports began. Moore mocked his pursuers with a signed note at one of his stops. A chalk outline of bare feet was left on the floor of a store during a robbery. A growing legend included folk songs, 20,000 friends on a Facebook page, and sales of T-shirts and other souvenirs. Moore's arrest in Harbor Island, the Bahamas, followed a discovery of a crashed Cessna on the shore of Great Abaco Island, a plane which had been reported stolen earlier in Bloomington, Indiana. Moore is not a pilot, but is thought to have learned how to steal planes and take off by reading online manuals and playing with a flight simulator game. Unfortunately, he never learned to land one, and the stolen planes were all recovered after being crash-landed. It's hard to know how much fun he might have had being an infamous anti-hero, but Moore is definitely not having fun in the legal system. After his offenses in the Bahamas were covered by paying a $300 fine, he was returned to the U.S. by the FBI, where multiple jurisdictions wanted a piece of him. Represented by an attorney hired by his mother, Moore took a plea deal last month on 7 federal charges in a Seattle courtroom. He'll be sentenced in October and could get 6.5 years in federal prison. Part of the deal involves turning over any profits from exploitation of his story to compensate his known victims for $1.4 million in losses. Some of the state and local charges still pending could carry enhanced penalties for the use of firearms. While he awaits sentencing, Moore is confined to the Federal Detention Center at SeaTac, Washington. Given his 6'5" frame, it's not surprising he plays basketball with other detainees to pass the time. But Cairo TV quotes his attorney, John Henry Brown, in reporting that Moore, who is now 20, broke his leg during one of the games. Brown was asked for details by the station, but would add only that his client did make the shot. Maybe he's just not used to sneakers. There's been lots of industry chatter recently about biojet fuels and electrically powered aircraft, but for airlines trying to reduce carbon emissions, there's more to the issue than what happens in flight. Fuel cell technology is emerging as a potential solution for emissions-free ground operations for commercial aircraft, which has prompted Airbus to partner with DLR, the German Aerospace Center, in examining the potential of this technology. As part of that evaluation, fuel cells were integrated into existing aircraft and successfully performed the first flight test on a civil transport aircraft in 2008. In that test, the fuel cell system provided power for the aircraft backup systems. Now, a DLR design technology demonstrator has been installed in a DLR-owned Airbus A320 at the Airbus site in Hamburg. The fuel cell powers an electric motor driving the nose gear, allowing the aircraft to taxi autonomously. Airbus says it considers fuel cell technology important in meeting goals for the reduction of CO2 emissions by 50%, oxides of nitrogen by 80%, and noise by 50%. And finally today, the Westland Lynx helicopter, which set a world speed record, is back on display after a four-year restoration by apprentices at the company now known as Augusta Westland. The project reportedly took 25,000 man-hours and restored the configuration and even the paint scheme that was on the aircraft at the time of its record flight. The Lynx featured advanced composite rotor blades developed as part of the British Experimental Rotor Program. On August 11, 1986, the craft made 249.1 miles per hour and technically still holds the helicopter speed record. The restoration was completed in time for the 25th anniversary of the record flight next month. But wait a minute, you say. How can the Lynx still hold the record after the Sikorsky X-2 demonstrator exceeded 250 knots last year? Well, that part gets interesting. Elfin Aparis, honorary president of the Rotorcraft Committee of FAI, the International Federation of Aeronautics in France, which keeps official world records for aircraft, claimed last year that the X-2 is not really a helicopter because it's a compound aircraft and derives some of its thrust from a pusher propeller driven by the same engine as the main rotors. Because of that, he says, the speed record set by the Lynx in 1986 should stand. Augusta Westland is hardly inclined to quibble. But the FAI's own definition of a helicopter is a rotorcraft which, quote, in flight derives substantially the whole of its lift from a power-driven rotor system whose axis is fixed and substantially perpendicular to the longitudinal axis of the rotorcraft, unquote. It says nothing about how thrust is produced. So the X-2 absolutely qualifies as a helicopter under FAI's own criteria. Ironically, here in the U.S., where the X-2 was born and lives, FAR 1.1 defines a helicopter as a rotorcraft which, quote, for its horizontal motion, depends principally on its engine-driven rotors, unquote. And the FAA's definition of propeller makes it clear that a propeller is not considered a rotor. So in the U.S., the X-2 might not legally be a helicopter. I'm just glad we have a completely impartial body making these decisions in France with no emotional ties to European companies whatsoever. That's the latest from Aero News. We have an ANN special feature for you today. I'll talk with CFI Bob Miller of Over the Airwaves about go-arounds and why they're nothing to be ashamed of. And if you haven't done it yet, subscribe to our AeroCasts at iTunes, Odeo, or at aero-news.net. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for listening. Have a clear and unlimited day.